Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Michelle Baskett, and I'm with the NCRD's Health Communication Science Office. I want to welcome you to our session this afternoon, and it's called Saying It Simply, Talking About Vaccines in Plain Language. And this is one of the challenges that I know we all face dealing with vaccines and communicating very complex messages to the public and our healthcare professionals and others. So it's nice to see a full room here. I also want to just say it's really nice to have this group of health communication professionals. They're all from the Washington State Department of Health, and I've had the honor and the privilege of working with them over the last few years, and they have done some really tremendous work. The session that you're about to see comes highly recommended. I cannot tell you how many phone calls I got really encouraging this session and talking about, did you get that abstract? Did you get that abstract? It's really wonderful. Can you pass that on to the committee that actually does the selections? So I think that we're all in for a big treat this afternoon. I want to kind of briefly tell you a little bit about these folks, but then turn it over to them. And I understand from the team here that they are very open to having conversation, dialogue, and questions throughout their presentation. So we're not going to hold questions to the end. We're just going to give them the full hour to talk and discuss and share with you the lessons that they have learned about plain language. So first, we have Tim Church, and Tim is actually the Director of Communications for Washington State Department of Health. He's also a past president of NIFIC, the National Public Information Coalition. And we have Don Moyer, who is also at the Washington State Department of Health, and he is the Media Relations Director. And we have Michelle Roberts, who actually runs their child profile. So she manages their child profile system and promotion for the vaccine program in Washington. So at this time, I'd like to turn it over to this really capable group of subject matter experts in communication.
Thanks, Michelle. Nice to see you. Thank you for that nice introduction. We're gonna try something a little different, and hopefully it'll work well, or we'll never be allowed back, or at least for 2 years. We won't be allowed back. Yes, thank you. So my name's Tim Church. I'm the communications director for the Washington State Department of Health, and I've been in public health now for about 10 years, but it's just flown by for me. And like a lot of folks I know, it wasn't really a grand plan per se. I worked in television news for 13 years, liked what I was doing. My station was purchased by Paramount, and they came into my office, into our newsroom about a week before Christmas and said, we have some exciting news. We're going to be running MASH at 10 o'clock at night on Channel 11. And those of us who were pretty sharp in the room said, but that's where the news runs at 10 o'clock at night. And they said, yeah, that's the second part of the announcement, is you guys are clearing out. So we had about a week to clear out our desk, and that was the end of my career in television. And I really just fell into public health. We were hiring a secretary of health who had just come on, and she was very interested in educating the public and the world more about what public health does. And I was interested in being employed, so it was a nice mix that we put together. And I've been doing it ever since, and I learn every day, and it's really exciting to be at a conference like this. Actually, it's kind of scary to be at a conference like this, because I don't necessarily think of myself as a public health person, but after 10 years, I guess I should start thinking that way a little bit. So I was in the agency for about 3 months, and we had some real grunt work that needed to be done. So I did what any good government employee would do. I hired somebody else, and so Don Moyer joined me after a long career in radio.
And one thing you'll notice about communications people is we're not very good with math. So Tim was actually there about 6 months. He's been there almost 12 years. I just finished my 11th year, and I only know that because I asked Michelle, who is good with math.
Thank you.
I came to the Department of Health in Washington in March of 2000. I think that makes it 11 years. And I started off doing, I had a two-month project there, a two-month assignment. It was a project work, and it was, just... Like, as Tim said, it was pretty entry-level stuff, just grinding out disciplinary action news releases. And I'm not sure he still really understands that I work for him, so I have been able to make that two-month job into 11 years. I spent 30 years in broadcasting before this, so it was when I left broadcasting, I didn't really have a plan. I did a Geronimo and said, well, I'll figure it out in 6 months. I was going to take some time off, and Tim called me about 3 weeks into it, and I realized I hadn't even looked at my resume in 17 years. So I just handed it over the way it was, and he didn't bother to read it, so that's how I got hired. But in the meantime, I think that both what Tim and I have been able to do at our agency and working with our local health partners and with our national partners as well is that we've been able to bring the things that made us successful in communications working in media. Tim has a television background. I have broadcast television and radio, but also some print journalism experience to be able to reach people in a way that they relate to the message and the information and yet still convey very important public health information so that it gets out to the public. And let me turn it over to Michelle. She came to us from CDC about 5 years ago, and my introduction to her was we were at the Joint Conference on Health, which is a big state meeting in Wenatchee, right in the center of the state, beautiful place, and she spent like the whole conference in my hotel room. It was great. That was because of the vaccine shortage. There was a damage of, vaccine problem. And so we spent the whole time with a couple of other people who may be in the room writing messages. We wrote news releases, fact sheets, talking points, and all kinds of things on my little laptop. And that's how I really got to establish a good, solid relationship with Michelle.
And I will say, when I walked into his hotel room, he had to pick up some assorted cans that were lying around. Anyways, so I'm Michelle Roberts. I've been actually in my job, back to the math skills, for 7 years now. And I work in the immunization program Child Profile for the state, and my job is to manage all of our health communication and education work, both around some general child health and around immunizations for all ages. And Tim says, he's not coming from a public health background, but I will say one of my proudest moments of Tim was probably 6 or 8 months ago on the phone, and he was telling me that his wife, who was a nurse, said something about flu vaccines that wasn't true. I can't remember exactly what it was. And he turned to her and said, just because two events are related in time doesn't mean one causes the other. And so I said, Tim, your job here is done. We have taught you well. But I will say in my job, and why I feel like I've gotten some good skills and do media relations and other messaging really well, is just what I've learned from Tim and Don. So I'm here today. I am nowhere near as entertaining as the two of them, and they've put me in the middle while they speak, but I think you'll get some good tips that hopefully you can learn to apply in your program.
And Tim's going to start off with a little bit of video. And one thing that Michelle Baskett said in the introduction that I want to reiterate is we typically don't wait till the end for questions. If you have a question that's relevant to what we're saying right now, go to the microphone. We'll stop what we're doing and talk it over right then. In fact, our goal is that you guys totally distract us from our PowerPoint so we don't even get to follow it. That's much more entertaining and informational for us, and we'll get a chance to have a good discussion. Tim?
There we go.
Did you hear about the tumor? She drank a bottle of drain cleaner by mistake. I heard she fell down a well. God, she's been dumped again.
Children, I won't be staying long. I just came from the doctor and I have Lyme disease. Principal Skinner will run the class until a substitute arrives.
What's Lyme disease?
I'll field that one. Lyme disease is spread by small parasites called ticks. When a diseased tick attaches itself to you and begins sucking your blood, malignant spirochetes infest your bloodstream, eventually spreading to your spinal fluid and on into the brain.
The brain? Oh, dear God.
Come on, Elizabeth. Oh. Come on.
I was on a plane, and I was watching that, and yes, I watch The Simpsons while I fly. I was on a plane, and I was watching that, and I laughed out loud and thought to myself, Principal Skinner worked in public health. because I heard that description of Lyme disease, and here he is talking to like a kindergarten kid, and he's talking about malignant spirochetes, and it made me laugh, because that's the way sometimes we want to explain things in public health, very, very detailed. Don and I showed this video. We did some training for people who work at our lab, and none of them thought it was funny. And all of them knew what a malignant spirochete was. So.
We had to explain to Tim that malignant spirochetes were not just another form of parakeet. And it took a little doing, but we finally got around to it. One of the things that we know about risk communication and crisis communication is that anytime there's a anxiety or fear level that's really high, people's comprehension level goes way down. They don't hear everything as detailed as you might think. So you can't talk to them in terms of malignant spirochetes. You could say ticks, but parasite probably wasn't necessary either.
So we like to start with this slide that Well, we're starting to get good at writing this way now that we've worked in government for 10 years or so, but we didn't used to be able to. So we call this presentation Advantageous Pedagogy Directed at Productive Collaboration on an Endeavor to Unobfuscate Prose.
Very efficacious, huh?
Yes. So, or Clear and Effective Communication. So moving right into it, you know, we thought we'd start with this because you should start with this. And it's and so many people do not. Don and I often get people who come to our office and they ask for advice on communicating a certain topic or a certain tool. And then we ask them, well, who's your audience? And often we get somewhat of a blank look, or it's, oh, you know, everyone. The world is my audience. And it's kind of hard to know who your target is if the world is your audience. So really narrowing down who your audience is the basic, most important thing you can do when you're communicating to someone.
It certainly makes a difference. For example, when I first started, we have an internal newsletter that we call The Sentinel. And about 6 months into it, we completely changed it. It used to be, you know, ghostwritten articles by agency managers talking to the staff. And we rearranged it so that it became people who work out in the agency talking about their work, so other people in the agency that are not connected to them might understand what they do. And we had there was a norovirus investigation that went on a cruise ship, and it got some nice play nationally, and CDC had remarked about the skill of our laboratory crew, so I asked a prominent member of that group to write the article. And we have a 250-word count. I got it about 1,300. I asked him to get it down to 800 and then sent it back to get it down. It was kind of like, you ever see the movie A River Runs Through It? And the dad, the Tom Skerritt's character, gives the older son, write it, now cut it in half. Finally, at about 500 words, I said, do you mind if I just rewrite this for you? And we ended up with a really nice article. I asked him why, and he said, well, I always write for my peers. I don't write for your audience. And he just could not visualize beyond his own peers. Now, that was 11 years ago, and that's no longer the case, because we've been talking about knowing who your audience is. If it is your peers, talk to them like you talk to them. That's okay with us. But if we're in the room, we're going to ask you some questions like, what's malignant spirochete mean?
So I have a quick question, and if you're undercover, you don't have to answer. But do we have any epidemiologists in the room? Any?
Couple?
Okay, there's almost as many of us as there are of you, so that's good. Because the next slide always hacks off epidemiologists. In most cases, it's more important to be understood than to be precise. So if you have any sharp objects, please put them down. We run into this all the time with folks, is they're so worried about precision that they don't worry about comprehension. And precision is, I get it's important. For some audiences, very important. If you're writing for the New England Journal of Medicine, absolutely important. If you're doing a news release where you're trying to inform people who read at an eighth grade level, precision is your worst enemy. Don and I, all of you are aware what happened in Japan, obviously. Some of you have seen some coverage, perhaps, of the West Coast and concern about radiation coming from Japan to the West Coast. We get the pleasure of, if you guys think your stuff is complicated, talk to a radiation physicist. That's all I can say. And they live by precision. So the other day we were trying to figure out a way how to put something up on our website that was communicating the radiation level that we were reading in Washington State. And because we're getting people wanted it. They wanted to see if it was going up, if it was going down. And it took us literally 4 days of trial and error to put something online that we felt the public could understand. Well, actually, we put something online for about 30 minutes that the public could not understand, and we pulled it really quick, but that's a story for later when we're drinking. So.
Well, one of the things that's important that we distinguish here is remember what this discussion is about today. We're talking about, you know, how to be successful with your communication, and especially to a public audience, the people you need to reach. If you're writing a technical report, by all means, please be precise. In the executive summary, though, maybe not as much, because many people, reporters in particular, read lots of executive summaries. If you lose them in the first couple of paragraphs, you've lost them for the whole report. So we actually write our news releases like we write news stories. And Tim mentioned the eighth grade reading level. It's not because we think people in the public don't read at higher levels than that. It's that, especially in today's world, I've got four electronic communication devices, and you're checking them all the time. You know, we're aware that some people in this room probably don't care about communication. They just want a quiet place to work on their BlackBerry, and that's okay with us. But the fact is, you've got to be able to get and hold people's attention in a short period of time, or you've lost them. And the way to do that is to know who they are and then write to them.
You know, I worked in television news for a long time, and I know, well, there's a term called SOT. That means sound on tape. There's a term called FR, which means field report. All of these are terms that Don and I could have a conversation, and we would know exactly what the other one is saying and not really think twice about it. But I don't get up here and talk to folks who have never worked in television and use terms like FR and SOT because you won't understand it. You'll think I'm being arrogant because you think I'm using terms purposely. And so it doesn't work. And that's really what we're asking you to do, is remember who your audience is. If you're talking to each other, you know, out here in the hallway, feel free to talk about all of the immunization jargon and lingo that you can come up with. But so often, you're not trying to reach yourself. You're trying to reach folks who are just regular folks with messages about what you do, and you can't talk the same way as you talk to each other in the hallway.
How many of you saw Alison Singer and Dr. Ed Marcuse earlier today? A few of you? Good. And one of the things that she said, she was kind of joking about the term CASE, which was their acronym. We have acronyms in media as well, and my favorite one as a radio reporter, and radio is my favorite of all media, and there's a lot of reasons, but the main thing is it's so immediate and so effective. But my favorite is ROSR. Anybody want to venture a guess what ROSR stands for? R-O-S-R. ROSR? Don't see any hands. You don't count. You don't get to guess. He's heard this before. It's recorded on-scene report. It's a term that means if you go someplace and you have your tape deck and you're outside of transmission range, you can record something into your recording. Well, I said tape deck. That's how long it's been since I've been. You know, digital recorder. And you bring it back and you've got all the natural sounds, if you're at a flood scene or something like that, that are in the background, and it sounds like you're on the scene because you were. It's a recorded on-scene report. But you can use terms like that and talk over people's heads. And in some ways, what you're doing is you're setting them outside and you're putting a barrier between yourselves and them. You may be doing that without intent, unintentionally, but it's still happening. And I think about that scene in the movie Saving Private Ryan, when Upham, the guy with the typewriter, is brought into the group and they won't tell him what FUBAR means. They are ostracizing him by using words he doesn't know. And you can do that on purpose. You can also do it without realizing it.
What is this tape deck you speak of, Don?
I'm a little older than you, my friend.
Don, when Don started in media, they had these big stone tablets and chisels.
Chisels.
To chisel words out. It took a while, so you really had to think twice.
Yeah, you should have seen how I had to carry my notebook around.
And that's why we use smaller words, because you could chisel out smaller words easier than the big ones. So some simple tips that really I think most people know, but they forget. They forget over time because as you, the more you work in government and the more you're communicating to folks like you, the easier it is for these things to kind of slip away. And so we like to remind you, stop and think before you write. Most people would claim they do that. I have evidence to show that's not true. So Don and I edit people's information all the time, and we're going to show you some words that we see all the time that make it clear that people are not stopping and thinking before they're writing.
How many of you have a chance to do radio or television interviews from time to time? Or public speaking. How about public speaking? Okay, a few, that, even more of you with that. So where it says write, think about that for your talks as well. You know, you certainly are going to start with writing a lot. PowerPoint's really common these days. You know, if you're going to do an interview, stop and think about that, too. And you might jot down whatever your messages are and practice them out loud. These are things that you can do. These tips and these tools for good communication work regardless of the venue.
Yeah, you know, imagine you're talking to the reader, and I know this can be awkward, but if you're doing something out loud, like a presentation or a media interview, actually say it. You know, close your office door or talk at your cube or take a walk outside and practice it. Practice speaking the words. One of the ways I like to check my own writing is to read it out loud, because if you read writing out loud, you quickly discover when it's really bad, and we'll give you some examples of that. And then just one example of talking, of actually practicing out loud. I was asked to do an interview about shellfish one Saturday, and I was at my daughter's t-ball game, so I took her with me to do a television interview. And on the drive down, I was practicing what I preach, and I was practicing what I wanted to say to this reporter to make sure I had it right. So I was talking about red tide and paralytic shellfish poisoning and how your lips can go numb and then your fingers can go numb, and it can paralyze you. And so I was totally engrossed in this as I was driving, and then all of a sudden I heard this little voice come from the car seat, "Daddy, who are you talking to up there?" But I practiced, and if you just try it and get it right, it'll feel better. It'll be natural. It doesn't feel natural at the time, but it will be natural.
Often we are called on to edit people's speeches or speeches for the Secretary of Health, for example, that are submitted by program content experts. And often when we get done with it, they don't recognize some of the writing. And what we've done is we've taken out technical terms, especially for a non-technical audience, and we put in common terms. And, you know, often the feedback we get, which to me is like fingernails on a chalkboard, we'll sometimes say, "Well, thank you for dumbing it down for me." And what you're really doing is you're talking about what you think of your audience when you say that. You may not realize it. It's not dumbing it down. It's being sure that you're understood instead of being precise. Again, we're talking about, you know, specific types of communication. And if you want to be effective, then talk the people's language.
Keep your sentence length down. I think that's simple. Unless you get paid by the word, don't write like you get paid by the word.
Tim joked earlier about me with the stone tablets using shorter words because it's less chiseling. In radio, when I started off in radio in 19... I had 60 seconds to tell my story. When I left radio in 2000, I had 25 seconds. It had been cut by more than 50%. Now, you could extend that by up to 15 seconds if you used what they call actuality, which means something recorded, the sound of a train going by, if you're at a train wreck, or an interview with a witness or a newsmaker of some type. But literally, at 25 seconds, you're trying to figure out how to reduce syllables in some words at times. So it really does come down. You can really boil things down to very simple language if you try.
Well, and a term Don just used really is what we all should be thinking about, which is telling our story. These are really tips to tell your story. So often I run into folks who, or this will happen to me, you get asked in an elevator, "Oh, what do you do? You know, how long have you been doing that?" And a lot of people really stumble with that. You know, they can't explain what they do and why it's important in 15 or 20 seconds. We should all be able to do that, especially when it comes to immunization. You should have that 20-second elevator speech ready to go, and your story should be brief. It should be in everyday language in a way that people can understand. We have kind of an active portion, and we're hoping folks will take part with us. The words on the screen are terms that we see every day in writing and editing we do. The first page, I have two pages. The first one is kind of regular terms, and the others are more specific to immunization. So I'd like you to just, as I go through them, just kind of shout out different alternatives, perhaps better alternatives to these phrases. So, and please join with me here. If you're using a BlackBerry, I can see you guys in the back. I know you're there. So, subsequent to. There we go. After. Utilize. You know, that's one of my favorites because it's amazing how many people Utilize.
So you got it backwards.
There we go. Oh, yeah, I got that backwards, didn't I? In the event that... If. On the occasion of when exercise caution.
Nicely done.
Oops, you have to double click. Be careful. Yeah, so simple when you're in a group, but people make these mistakes all the time.
And utilize is one of those words that seems to crop up a lot in technical writing. For some reason, it's in all government writing. I work with other types, not just public health. We work with various other agencies, and it seems to be, I'll use a really big word here, Tim, you can look it up later. It seems to be ubiquitous. How's that?
I know. That was a big word.
Yeah. But I actually have a sign I put up when I'm particularly running into a lot of it on my cubicle wall, and it says, why use the word utilize when you can utilize the word use? And I point to people to that when they hand me their reports.
I have to think about that for a few minutes. Okay,
brain
so
teaser.
These are easier or harder depending on a few things, I guess. So pathogen, germ, great. Varicella, yeah, varicella, fine in some circumstances, use it, but so often chickenpox will do just fine. Now, one of our personal favorites, probably our all-time favorites in this category, 431-331.
I heard someone say it. Primary series is one way of saying it. There's another way. Recommended vaccines.
You know, and you know what I'd say?
Yeah.
Anything but 431-331. There's nothing that could be worse than 431-331. As a matter of fact, Don and I tease Michelle about it regularly because we're like, what's that? 4624. It's like a secret code that only immunization people know.
We had to rehearse it today so they could get it off their tongue.
We had to read it and read it and read it out
so,
loud.
You know, drum roll, please. 15 dose series. Did I hear some other
some really good
ideas?
Ones.
We'll take suggestions on that one.
Without revenue.
What was that?
Somebody said the recommended schedule. Yeah.
Really, I go back to what I said before. Anything but that is going to be better. Surveillance. Tracking and monitoring. So let me tell you a little story about surveillance. And think about this. For those of you who use the term surveillance in public, I hope you never do in the same way again after we talk about it. But is surveillance something you want government to do? You know, think about it. You know, Don,
in your neighborhood.
Don, you know, think of this. So you get this phone call. You're at home, and we're doing a little surveillance about STDs, and we're going to be in your neighborhood later this week. Don't, you know, keep your curtains open, if you will. So it's a term that we hear all the time, and public health is very proud of it. They don't say surveillance with any shyness at all. We're doing surveillance. I mean, it's something public health is very proud of. Use it in your hallway. Use it amongst yourself. Don't use it in public. It doesn't work very well. And then, actually, it's another one. This one actually fits pretty well because when I heard it, it sounded a lot like what you'd find if you were doing STD surveillance is rhinorrhea. We were on a conference call with, actually, Michelle, that was a CDC term where I heard that. It was an H1N1 conference call very early on, and the CDC doctor was talking about various things, and they said, and of course, one of the symptoms is rhinorrhea, and I went, how does that work? I thought you had to be naked to get that.
Don't want your rhino to have
anyway,
it.
So for those of you who are much smarter than me, rhinorrhea is runny nose. So, but again,
who
knew? I mean, how often do you really have to use the term rhinorrhea? That's what I think. So, Anyway, let those things. I'm sure all of you have other terms like that that you can think about. We really did just scratch the surface with that list of 8 or 10.
Now, Tim told you that we have real life examples that some people really aren't thinking, you know, sitting down and stopping to think first before they write. And some of these are from our own experience, actually. So this is an all staff memo to the entire State Department of Health in Washington. DIRMIT required non-standard maintenance upgrading agency phone circuits. Anybody know what that means?
No.
We don't either. we figured it out, but first let me tell you how we figured it out. The first thing that struck me is the first two words with all caps, which are obviously acronyms, they don't really look like that to me. It looks like sort of an IT version of an expletive, you know, like you smash your thumb. You splash your thumb with a laptop or a BlackBerry or something because not a hammer. You would never use a hammer. But and then you bang, Dermot! Oh, that hurts. The amazing thing about this is this was what happened after we gave them advice to improve their messaging. I got to tell you. This same group, and we love these guys, they try really hard, but this same group had sent a message one time that said, we are scheduling non-scheduled maintenance. So I called him up and said, if you're scheduling it, isn't that scheduled? Well, yes, it is now, but it wasn't before. You can say that of any schedule, can't you? Tim and I were not scheduled for this program until we were scheduled.
Don and I are really PC, as you can tell. And we had several examples and had to find the ones that were okay to make fun of and... Okay, I'm sorry, my IT guy's listening, so if the screen goes black, I'm in trouble.
Our mics go off.
But IT folks are about the only ones in the world that's acceptable to tease anymore. Although I remember this one well because I was talking on the phone and it went off, and I was like, why didn't they tell me about this?
Dermot!
The other thing about emails, which I think we can all appreciate, especially IT emails we all get in our agencies, is that they also then will go into like 3 paragraphs of the reason why, and there's this new upgrade, and Microsoft just released it, and then buried down, not on the first screen of your email, says you need to restart your computer. And so also another tip for writing is, what is your main message? What do your employees need to know? They need to know they need to restart their computers, but nobody's going to read down the 3 emails of why.
Yeah, Michelle's exactly right. I mean, I'm sorry, because I love IT. I love that this is working right now. Are you hearing me over there? So I really do. I love IT, but all I want to know is, computer work when I push big button, computer go off when I push big button. You know, and everything else is gravy as far as I'm concerned. So it's funny. So we talked to these folks and we said, you know, you could really make your message a little bit better so people can understand it. We had a legitimate conversation. I think they were listening to us. And so then a week or so later, the message came out. It was like, DIRMIT required non-standard maintenance, phones no worky or something like that.
Yeah, that's what they were doing. Is they were going to fix the phones. They had a little phone problem. We get a lot of very technical stuff. You know, I think everybody can relate to this, especially if you ever are involved in responding to somewhat emergency situations. I'm averaging about 250 emails a day since the Japan earthquake nuclear reactor thing. I can't keep up with email. And things like the one we just showed, they become junk mail after a while. If you can't get through to people, you just look at it and go, something's happening with IT. I'll figure it out when my computer crashes and call the help desk.
First of all, I'm going to tell you, I hate it when people do what I'm about to do, and I apologize for it. But this isn't a slide you're really supposed to read, but you hear that all the time. But this really isn't a slide you're supposed to read. So this is a email that one of our people sent back to a reporter. The reporter emailed him. He was with our pharmacy board and said, I was at a store, and I saw a pharmacist giving a flu shot. Can a pharmacist give a flu shot? Okay, probably a different answer in different places. So, and the pharmacy board person was really nice, and they CC'd me on the email back to this reporter. The administration of vaccine requires a couple of legally defined acts, prescription of the legend drug and administration of the drug to the person. The administration of the drugs is within blah, 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 blah. Anybody have any thoughts of what might have been a better answer than this? Yes! He could have said, like in 75 font, he could have just put yes in one word across the screen. And it was really funny. So we're trying to be helpful. So I contacted the reporter and said, did you understand that email? And she said, well, I think it was kind of meaning yes. And I said, yeah, that's pretty much what it meant was yes. But remember a couple slides ago, the use short sentences and use words that people understand. And I think this slide breaks every rule we just had on the page before.
The one word that's not in there is pharmacopoeia.
Yeah. Because I'll guarantee you something else, too. If they would have read this out loud, remember we talked about reading out loud. If the person who wrote this would have read this out loud, they never would have pushed the send button. I hope, anyway. So,
don't count on it.
What was that over
there? Hey, I'm just here for you.
I heard this one just recently. This is a new addition to our wall of shame. I was listening to a story on CBS Radio about a week ago, and it was about adults huffing and that more adults huff now and, you know, put stuff in bags and inhale it. And they go to this soundbite from this guy, and he says, inhalants can have a pernicious effect on your health. And I was in the garage at the time in my car. I had to walk into the office, pull out my dictionary, and look up the word pernicious before I could understand what he was saying.
You mean you didn't know what your pern was?
Well, I kind of did, but yet I could not imagine why you would use the word pernicious in a radio soundbite on a topic like this. I mean, again, not the right words for the right audience.
So with that, we're going to, you know, kind of wrap that portion up by this quote, which we think is a really nice one. And it's right to the point. Don't say slender yellow fruit when you're just trying to say banana.
And you know, we won't call folks out here, but I'm sure there's lots of folks in this room who would say slender yellow fruit instead of banana. So we want to jump into just some tools that we use. Don and I have gone to a lot of communication training with people that tell you all these great things to do that take weeks and months, and we leave that training and we think, yeah, like I'm ever going to do that. So we hope to not leave you with ideas that you're going to say, yeah, like I'm ever going to do that. So these are some simple tools that you can use that really only have to take as much time as you want them to. You literally could, in the time of the rest of this presentation, but don't, please, you could do some of these things, like draft a tough Q&A.
And we use the term tough Q&A, tough questions and answers. It's different than frequently asked questions or what types of question and answer you might put on your website, for example. We literally sit down, and often it's Tim or I might do it, or somebody on our staff, or we might ask Michelle, just start jotting down what would be the hardest question somebody could ask for you to answer, because either the question is tough, it's a question that comes from misinformation, or maybe because the answer is very technical and it's hard to figure it out. Get a whole bunch of those, as many as you can think of, and, you know, really try to think of what would somebody who's a little upset or worried, doesn't understand, and possibly has been pumped full of years worth of misinformation, and then write those questions down. Then you give them to content experts like Michelle and let them give the answers. And then we edit those answers down so that they, become more in the sort of a plain language type of an approach. And usually they get shorter, the words get shorter, and when you boil them down, you'll find that themes and theories and little philosophical umbrella-type statements come out of those, and we use those as key messages.
The biggest mistake we see people make with tough Q&As is not being honest with themselves. You know, when you do a tough Q&A, the most important point is getting that really tough question. That question you hope no one ever asks you about because it's going to be really painful to answer, and then you have to come up with your answer for it. And what we often see when we work with program staff on tough Q&As is they say, oh, tough Q&A, okay. Why are shots good for me? You know, they want to start with just easy, simple stuff and start there. But get really into the weeds. Get those really hard questions that you don't want somebody to ask you, and then answer it. and come up with an answer that your communications group agrees with, that your program experts agree with, and then you've got it. When we do media interviews, often we prep staff, and it's great when they do the interview. The best compliment that we can get in my office is when the staff come back to us and say, "That was way easier than the questions you guys gave me before we did that interview." Well, that's what we want to see. If you're honest with yourself, if you think of the worst funding programs or questions, safety questions, you name it, and you come up with your right answer for it, no one's going to be able to slip one by you. You're never going to be standing there in this place with like, "God, no one's asked me that before." You know, so be honest with yourself. Ask the toughest questions you can. And then if you have folks like Don and I who work for you, are with you, let them come up with really tough questions and do not take offense to it. When Don and I first started at our agency, we oversee regulation of healthcare providers. And that means, so you have a problem with a healthcare provider, you make a complaint. If we investigate, either we take action or we don't. And sometimes that investigation and action process could take a year and a half. So when we met with our healthcare provider disciplinary staff, we said, "Why is this taking so long?" And they were very offended by it. And they gave us lots and lots of answers and said, "You know, oh, you're just the media's friend. You're going to go out there and tell reporters." And we said, "No, anybody in their right mind would want to know why does it take so long. So you need an answer to that question. If it's a legitimate answer, great. You know, so be it. But ask yourself why it takes so long and then come up with the answer to that question. And now you have it. Because I'm sure we weren't the first to ask it, and I'm sure we weren't the last to ask it.
And that's what I was just going to add, and then use these things. Most of the media interviews you're probably likely going to do are going to be radio or over the phone talking to somebody. Have these documents ahead of you, and then you don't, in front of you. You don't have to think about what's the answer. You're not going to ramble about it. You've got it there. You've got your phrase. You've got your soundbite already, and it's going to get picked up that way.
In fact, one of the keys to thinking about whether a tough question really is a tough question is if when you look at that question, you go, "Oh, gosh, I hope no one ever asked me that," because then you know you've got a tough question. But, you know, they are going to ask. And if they don't, you've been ready. There's nothing wrong with being prepared for something that doesn't happen. We all do that, hopefully. And that's the whether you're speaking publicly or doing a media interview or writing, you'll find that when you go through a process like that, it's really pretty quick. You can make it as big or as small as you want. But you'll feel a lot better about your preparation, and that you also start writing from a clearer spot. You know, you have a beginning, a middle, and an end.
You know, key messages and talking points are something that I think people would serve themselves well to use far beyond media and writing and that sort of thing. You know, all of us go to important meetings every day. Many of them are meetings we schedule because we want to communicate to somebody about something. But it's amazing to me how often you get to a meeting and there's some level of, "Yeah, who invited us? What are we here for today?" I mean, you should always think, if you have an important topic, what are my key messages? What do I want to leave this person with? If you're at home, you know, and you've had a fight with your spouse, you know, "I'm going to write down some key messages here." You know, I mean, think about it. I know this has happened to you, to many folks here. It happens to me on occasion, as you would be shocked by this. But where you get in some kind of a passionate discussion, and then you're in the car on the way home, and you're like, "Dang it! You know, I should have said this. Why didn't I say this at that point? You know, my boss. I asked my boss for a raise, and they said, 'Well, give me three good reasons.'" And you're like, "I got nothing." You know, and then you're driving home, and you're like, "Oh, well, I worked late yesterday. That's worth a few bucks." So, you know, you got to think ahead of time. What are my messages? What are my talking points? And then not only think about them and write them down, but use them. You know, write them on a napkin, write them on the back of something, and use them. It's really not that hard.
We think of that term credible spokesperson at the bottom there, and it says, it makes people think that we're talking only about reporters or media, but that's really not the case. You know, if you are answering questions of partners, local health partners, or if you're a local health working with a neighboring county or with your state or whoever, you know, you've got to serve as a spokesperson. If you're talking to friends or family over the holidays about the work you do and the important things that you're working on, why whatever your work is, should matter to them, then your credibility is your stock in trade. And we know that by preparing in the ways we've talked about, that you can feel more comfortable in it. And when you do feel confident and comfortable in what you're talking about because you have done these things, you'll deliver those messages much more clearly, and you, in fact, will enhance your own credibility.
So I would hope you can tell by where we're at so far today that our communications office has a really good relationship with our immunization program. And so with that, I'm going to turn it over to Michelle here for a little bit, and she's got some slides she's going to walk through.
I might have to go back into therapy. I'd forgotten about your hotel room, which is why I think I've stayed 7 years. So.
It's happened more than once.
Anyways, so I wanted to talk a little bit about what this means for people, for those of us that are on the program level, which I think means a lot of us here. So, you know, I'm one program within a big state agency that has a lot of activities going on everywhere, from radiation to healthcare licensing and all the traditional kind of community and health type of programs. And so one thing I think I really want to encourage you is to think about making sure you've hired somebody who's got communication expertise in your program. That's just going to help you work and get your messages out and be successful in your promotion in a way that you won't be able to otherwise. This is somebody who can think about, how do I tell a story? How do I write a clear message? So you don't have somebody like your epidemiologist or others trying to sit down and write something for a public document or things. You can work together to do that and help be really successful. So I think that's just something I'd really encourage you to do. Also, it's all about relationships, and I know this can go anywhere, but I think some of the things why we've worked so well together is we've spent time building this relationship and working through things. And that works with, we were just talking about being a credible spokesperson to your community partners and other people that you work with. So we all know that immunizations has hot topics almost every day, it seems like. There's stuff that's almost always in the media. You have a few things all year long that you know are going to get attention. Flu season's always going to get attention. Back to school immunizations. You have a disease outbreak. So it's kind of predictable. So one of the things we've done, which I think is a really smart strategy for a program, is I meet with these guys and along with my staff once a month. We sit down. We talk about the things that are coming up. We talk about what our strategy is going to be. Are we going to do a news release for immunization rates this year? What do we want to do for flu? What's going to be our work this year? What are our main messages? So then that kind of gives some insight for them. So when we go back and start trying to do this work, we've already got their input. We already know that we're on track with where the agency wants to go. And that just saves you a lot of heartache later on from when you've done a long news release and you say, why aren't you going to run this? It's the greatest thing ever. So I think that's just really important. And they've helped to kind of think about, too, just for me, about what is your message. And I think Tim's going to probably talk more about it tomorrow. But, you know, it's not good enough to have your message be that it's National Infant Immunization Week or just that it's flu season. You know, what do you want to tell people and what's going to grab their attention? That's background information. So nobody in the public cares that it's National Infant Immunization Week. They care that shots protect kids and kids can die if you don't get them. There's your message. So just really important things that having a relationship with your communication people can help you with. Plan ahead and then use it. I mean, this kind of just hits back on what they're talking about around the key messages, the tough Q&A, and things like that. Do those things and then use them. Use them when you're talking to the media. I keep them on my desk. If we've done a news release, I have our questions and answers and our key messages out, and I have them highlighted. So when that media phone call comes in, I'm just using that to answer the questions so I don't have to think on my feet. I've got it all prepared. You can also use them, like they said, well beyond that. When we're going to sit down and do a no educational brochure, go back to those kind of things. You've done some good thinking. Use that messaging again. We've touched on this already, sound bites and elevator speeches. How can somebody in the public understand what you do or understand what's important about pertussis or something like that? You need to have those things ready. You can't just go into, or like The Simpsons, you know, a lot about, well, pertussis is a disease, it's caused by a bacteria, you know, that kind of, nobody cares. What's important about pertussis, and this is, we've been getting calls because we've, you know, on the West Coast, people have been interested in what's happening with Washington after what's been going on in California. And, you know, one of the things we say, you know, our disease rates are about the same as they've been the last few years, but we're always concerned when we see a case of pertussis. And why? Because it can kill babies. That's it. That's going to make people stop and think about it. So you need to have that stuff ready to go. So it can be used. And then that's what, when somebody asks you, that's what's going to cause a reporter to actually write a story about what you're trying to tell them versus just you shipping information out there that nobody's ever going to use. And then I can't say enough about peer review and target audience input. I think you should never put a document out for a partner or for the public if you've not had a minimum had peer review. So it's kind of that good thing about, you know, reading it out loud. Ask a coworker to read it. So build that into a process as a standard that you do in your program. And you're just, it's only going to make it stronger. It can never hurt. I mean, you might be a little painful when somebody says, or you come back with a little bit of red ink, but in the end, you're going to make sure your message is going to be heard. And that's why we're doing the work we're doing, because we want people to know about the messages we're trying to communicate with them. So we also wanted to show you an example of some of our key messages and then show you a couple about how that's played out in a news release, and then we're going to play one media clip for you. So these are some of the key messages around immunization rates that we've used. Seem to kind of just circulate, and kind of the things when we get asked about our rates we come back to. So, and it's also kind of a good lesson, too, about don't be afraid to share the bad news, because that's also something that's going to be a lead and that media may pick up on as well. So we always stick back to Washington's rates do not meet our goals, and we take that very seriously. So just lay the problem out there. And why are we concerned? We're concerned because that means we'll continue to have disease outbreaks, often in unvaccinated kids. And that's something we've really tried to stress, because we know there is that connection, and that brings it home and makes it more real for people. We've also tried to add some social norming messages in. So the vast majority of parents do vaccinate their kids. We thank them for that. But we know that some parents have questions and concerns. There's your empathy message. And we understand why. And so, you know, and then a couple supporting points under that, or what a talking point would be, which is a point that supports your key messages. We understand why parents struggle with vaccine decisions, and we know that parents want to do what's best for their children. So here is one of our news release from last year when the immunization rates were released. And it's actually just not the entire news release. We pulled out a couple different paragraphs we wanted to highlight. But you can see that our key messages continue just to kind of work right through there. So, you know, the subheadline on our, the byline, see? Subheadline, right there, more work to do to prevent disease. That goes right back to our first key messages. Recent disease outbreaks in our state, touching on that one. Back in the last paragraph, we want to make sure families have accurate information about immunizations. What do we want them to do? So just once you've done that work, before you start writing your news release, you should be writing your key messages and what are supporting points, and then that's what you want to put into your news release when you start writing that next document. And then here is a clip for one of the media stories we got from the news release last year.
Those vaccine crusaders at the Department of Health have tried just about everything, but it's really hard to get child immunization rates anywhere near the goal of 80%. Michelle Roberts is in charge of promoting vaccines across Washington.
I think one of the big challenges in our state are families choosing not to fully vaccinate.
As opposed to being too poor or lacking access to a pediatrician, while nearly every child has the polio vaccine, for example, Robert says some parents pick and choose and delay doses of certain vaccines because they're worried perhaps about a link to autism or about having too many shots at once.
All that has become kind of an urban legend, and there's not good science behind that, but we really understand the emotions of where parents are coming from. It's a lot of immunizations. There's a lot of misinformation out there.
By age three, about a third of kids have missed at least one booster shot. A common one is the fourth dose of the pertussis vaccine, making these kids vulnerable when a teenager or adult unknowingly gets sick, which happened several times this summer. The latest public campaigns are enlisting moms to become vaccine ambassadors and using federal stimulus money to visit hundreds of pediatrician offices and help them do a better job talking to hesitant parents. Keith Seinfeld, KPLU News.
So in that, I mean, you'll hear that there was messages about we couldn't have been happier with the story because it hit on where our rates were, it hit on parents being concerned, it hit on disease outbreaks and risk to kids, and a couple other things I think were captured in that one. So I think that's why if you just figure out how you want your messaging to track, you can see it track through it from your key messaging document to the stories that the media end up coming with. And that's why it's so important to do the work on the back end to make sure you know what your message is, you know who you're talking to, and people are going to understand it.
And, you know, I was a little quick on the draw there, but I don't know if you heard the beginning of that story. He called us vaccine crusaders. And I'll tell you what, we wear that badge proudly. And that's not from a lack of effort. We're in close contact with him and media frequently. There's no confusion of where we stand on vaccine rates in our state and our work to make them better.
In fact, Tim's getting a cape and a mask.
Yeah. With a big V on it. That'd be really cool.
One of the other things you may have noticed after Michelle went through the key messages, she showed you the news release, and then we played the, that happened to be one of the regional reporters for NPR. And many of the, what we call transitions or bridges that he was talking about, his copy that he was reading used our information. So he was writing his news story from our news release, and basically he was saying messages as though they were part of his report, which they were, but they came from us. And if you start, you know, this isn't really a risk communication discussion, but the theory is be first, be right, be credible. We were reaching out. We're telling people what we're trying to accomplish, why it's important, and then we're making ourselves accessible. So those three things happened in that news report.
So I think we're just about out of time. I want to show you just one thing as we wrap up. It's an example that we're proud of in kind of a silly way, but we decided and worked closely with Michelle to put together a flu prevention campaign that we were hoping would be grabby. And we worked with a PR agency and went through a lot of different ideas and really had multiple ones to choose from and test. In the end, a person in my office had tossed off a comment at a meeting much like this one. She was doing a presentation and her PowerPoint wasn't working, and she said something to the effect of, "I just have a note from the governor, and the governor has authorized that we can change the name of our state from Washington to Wash Your Hansington." And we told this story to the PR company, and they loved it. They came back to us and surprised us with an idea for a very simple campaign. Wash Your Hansington, and it has in it very clear, you know, simple messages. Wash your hands. You guys all know them. Wash your hands, cover your cough, stay home if you're sick, get vaccinated. And it's been easily the most successful campaign we've done in the 10 years I've been at the Department of Health. Simple, direct. Some of you, if you're in the room this morning, and I'm going to show it in my presentation tomorrow, a different version, you saw a really corny, cheesy video in the room this morning before Ann Schuchat spoke. And we've got more attention, good and a little bad occasionally, with that. But it was about really taking a risk and getting out there and knowing what our messages are and being very straightforward and plain talk. And we're proud of the success we've had with it. So I think we're just about done. We're done.
We just got the axe. Yeah,
so,
you guys are
well,
done.
Thanks for being patient and allowing us to have a little fun.